folks. Welcome to this week's edition of the Chicago Football Podcast. I'm Kevin Fishbane. Our executive producer, Dan Mott's out sick. We got John Solly here. And Jason Frummer filling in, helping out on the board. Got a fun show for you today. Patrick Manley will be my guest. The greatest Bears long snapper of all time, that's for sure. We'll talk about that with him. Talk about Bears free agency. Everything else that we want to chat about. Obviously, Pat hosted on the Score for a little bit after he retired, and he does pregame shows with Hub on 670. Busy week last week. We didn't have a podcast last week. A lot going on. Danny Trevathan, Jarrell Freeman, your new starting inside linebackers. Akeem Hicks is your new starting defensive end. Bobby Massey, your new starting right tackle. Kyle Long's a guard. Mark Mariani's back. Mitch Unrein is back. Tracy Porter is back. Zach Miller, Sherrick McManus, Jaquizz Rodgers. John Solly, pretty calculated, simple, straightforward week of work for Ryan Pace. Nothing extravagant, but the team looks better right now, especially on defense, than they did at the end of the season.
And, you know, I really kind of like what Pace did. He's not bringing in over-the-hill guys. He's not bringing in, you know, the Jared Allens or guys that are at the tail end of their careers and you're hoping to squeeze out. You know, you're not going to get 16 games out of them, but maybe you can squeeze out 12 games, four quality games maybe, and pay a guy a boatload of money. He's getting ascending players, guys who are in the prime of their careers. He hasn't overspent, I don't think, on any of these guys. I think if you're a Bears fan, you really have to like that there is a competent plan in place.
And hearing from not only the guys who signed, but also Zach Miller, the environment at Hallis Hall that they have fostered is really helping bring people in. I mean, they think it's a winning team. I mean, they see it as a team on the rise. Akeem Hicks could have gone back to New England. He said he's a believer in this defense. Zach Miller had options. Bobby Massey, Dan Trevathan, Jarrell Freeman, they all had options, and they like where this organization is going. And those are the signings and re-signings so far. Member ChicagoFootball.com has got all of the stories, all of our analysis, columns, what have you. You can follow me at KFishbane. You can follow all of our Bears work at Bears_Insider. But you didn't come and download this podcast to listen to me. You're here to listen to our guest today, Patrick Manley. You can follow him on Twitter at Patrick Manley. Pat, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Good, Pat. So I kind of brought this up at the top of the show. Are you the greatest long snapper of all time? And if not, how does one determine who is?
First off, let's answer that. No, I am not. I don't believe that. There's guys that played before me that were great that I followed. Trey Junkin, Adam Schreiber. I mean, there's just numerous guys that I followed that kind of showed me the ways, and the other guys that started, you know, making this or what I did. Specialized skill, but no, I'm not. I do not call myself the greatest to ever do it. There's too many of us, and there's too many good ones.
Can I call you the best Bears long snapper ever?
Maybe, because there hasn't been really that many on the roster.
Well, they've
I might be the first one.
They've gone through three now, I think, since you've retired. So, and you were on the Bears for a few seasons. I don't know if folks know that about you. You were around for a while.
A couple.
But I guess, that's why I ask, because you would know. I mean, long snapper is the most specific position probably of any of the four major sports. And it's not like, I mean, I remember one time writing about you, and I think maybe the Bears supplied it, that you hadn't missed a snap. You know, that's like the stat. You know, how many games you played, and if you missed a snap at all. I mean, there's special teams tackles, but are there other numbers that one could use to judge long snappers?
Yeah, I do. How good your field goal kicker is and how good your punter is. As a long snapper, your job is to make them look good. If they're doing well, that means you're doing your job well. So that's how, you know, that's how I judged myself. If Brad Maynard or Adam Podlesch were punting well, that meant I was getting the ball where it needed to be. And if Robbie or Jeff Jaeger or Paul Edinger, or all those other kickers we went through in the middle of my career, if they're doing well, then I'm doing a good job. So that's how I graded myself.
And obviously those guys did pretty well. And we won't spend the whole podcast obviously talking long snapping, but I do have to ask, too, do you think that Lovie Smith, now Illinois, they're going to have the best special teams long snapper, kicker, punter combination in the Big Ten, at least. You got to imagine that, right?
I he puts a lot of emphasis, obviously, on defense and takeaways, and he's a big believer in special teams. So I think we'll put a lot of emphasis on that. And if he would like me to come down there and help out, I'd love to. I don't want to be a full-time coach yet, but I think any of us ex-players for him would love to go down there and help him out. But I do know they'll have a pretty darn good special teams unit.
I was talking with Tom Musick, our former colleague here, about potential special teams coaches for Lovie Smith. Your name, of course, came up. A Craig Steltz could jump in there. Yep. I mean, you can go on and on about the special teamers, but it was a cool thing for the Bears. Ian Badejo, all the guys that came through, and Bears fans knew the names of these players that maybe other teams. I think New England's got that a little bit, where you know some of the special teams guys, Slater over there in New England, and some of the guys who did it when they had their Super Bowls earlier in the decade. But Lovie definitely fostered that, where Bears fans knew about the special teams players, because, as you mentioned, he put such a big emphasis, which had to make it a little extra fun for you guys, that you might get a little more attention when things were going well, certainly, than you might have gotten in another market.
It did. You know. First off, it started with that emphasis of Lovie, but secondly, him hiring Dave Tobe. Dave Tobe
is
the best special teams coach I've played for. He was there all during Lovie's tenure. He's now in Kansas City. And Lovie let Dave do what he did best and then coach special teams and almost kind of stepped out of the way, letting him coach, but Lovie, like you said, put emphasis on it. And another thing that was kind of cool that Lovie did for us was one game a year, he would introduce, normally the offense runs out or defense runs out, would let the special teams unit, get introduced, run out of the tunnel once a year. And I thought that was kind of a neat little tribute he would do for us to let us get recognized by the fans.
Absolutely. And I also kind of want to know, and I'm sure one of the guys at 670 has asked you this before, what's the weirdest thing someone said to you right before you snapped the ball?
It wouldn't be what was said. I'll give you my story of Warren Sapp.
Okay.
We're playing in Soldier Field. It was early in my career. Warren Sapp played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I think we had kicked a couple field goals. So we heard our cadence before. Just say our cadence was hot, right, set. So he knew in the middle of that when the ball was generally going to be snapped. So in the middle of Brad Maynard's cadence, you could hear him bringing up a loogie from as deep as if somebody brings it. And I just knew he was going to spit on my hands. And as soon as the ball, Brad Maynard said set, just I had splatter all over my hands from Warren Sapp. And fortunately, the snap was okay and we made the kick. But that's the most memorable. I wouldn't say that's obviously not no any words, but that's the most memorable thing that ever happened to me before a snap.
No,
and that was that day was still to this day is crazy.
That's better than any words that could be said. That's a hilarious story. And folks that are listening, I'm probably coughing up one here too. But I feel like if I was down there in the trenches with you, Pat, right before you snap, I might try to think of something really random. Just say, hey, Pat, did you watch American Idol last Thursday? I can't believe, I just try to mess with your mind a little bit. I think I might, I don't know if that would have ever worked on someone as focused as you at such a trade, but I just kind of imagine guys might say really weird things down there just to kind of mess with your head a little bit.
Well, it wasn't too much. Actually, more came of it from my own teammates during practice. Anthony Adams, the character he is, and Charles Tillman would be on the outside on the rush team, and he would say a couple things. So I think those guys actually got me ready for the game more because they knew me better and they knew what would try to rattle me. And I guess I wouldn't get rattled during practice, but those guys probably had an edge on somebody I didn't know just because they knew my personal life.
Right. So let's get into what the Bears have done in the past week. And before I get your take on the additions, how many times were you a free agent in your career?
Zero.
Zero. They kept you every time.
I got extended every time before I got to free agency. So I never had a chance to go out there and test the waters. With the long snapper, the contract's simple. Yes, there's 32 guys, but you're not trying to go out there and ask for a whole lot of money. You really enjoy the comfort of knowing your coach and your specialist that you're working with and being in Chicago and kind of putting those years together like I did when I got to my third contract, which I guess was a six-year extension. Going into my fifth year of a fifth-year extension, I knew I was going to be there. There's no way I was going to go anywhere else at the end of my career. I think I was either going to retire If they didn't want me back, I didn't really want to go try to play somewhere else. Unfortunately, I think they gave me a 2-year contract and a 1-year contract to make it 16 total, but I never got to test free agency.
Well, and as somebody who's covered the league, I know that early in mid-February, when there's not a lot going on, then you would have a long snapper extension story. I'd get a press release from a team, you know, that they've signed a long snapper. So I'm like, you know, those would be the stories that we would write when nothing's going on. Because as you mentioned, if you're a team and you like your long snapper, you just get it done. It's pretty simple. You get it done in January, February, even during the season, and then you move on. So I guess, yeah, you don't have, but as you said, there's not a ton of shopping yourself out there at that position, but you get that comfort of always knowing where you're going to be.
Yeah, and it just makes your life a lot easier, and I think the coaches get comfort as well. I know Dave Tobe was comfortable with me, and he didn't want to replace me, so I had him on my side, you know, with Cliff Stein and Jerry Angelo or Phil Emery, and whenever we were negotiating, I always had him on my side, so it made it a lot easier because he didn't want to make a change.
Right. All right, let's start with the four guys the Bears brought in. Danny Trevathan, Jarrell Freeman, the inside linebackers, Bobby Massey, the right tackle, Akeem Hicks, the defensive linemen. What stood out to you about these additions and how they are really four starters who should immediately impact the Bears next season?
What I loved was that Ryan Pace, in my opinion, the number one deficiency on the team was inside linebacker last year.
Yeah.
Now he's taken that and turned it into that's probably their best position now on the defense. So he's taken their weakness and made it a strength. And I think that's impressive and some good foresight to get that done. And then more importantly, they're all cap friendly. So it doesn't strap them for anything or any other position anywhere else. And they've gone out and got two guys. You know what, Danny's what, 26, I believe. And Jarrell Freeman's going to be 30 or is 30. So they're, you know, one's young and one has still got a few more years left. So I think they can anchor the middle of that defense for a few more years. And I like the fact they took a weakness and made it a strength.
And you tweeted about Bobby Massey, watching a little tape on him. What do you like about what he's going to bring to that offensive line?
You know, people always try to make comps for players. And during our run to the Super Bowl, we acquired Fred Miller. And he kind of reminds me of a younger, a young Fred Miller. When we got Fred Miller, he was kind of, you know, he's on the tail end of his career. But he had figured out his weaknesses. He had figured out who he was and became a good NFL player. And I think Bobby Massey can do that. And number one, he is just a road grader. He can run block with the best of them. He has great technique in the run game. And with him and Kyle Long on that right side, and as much as John Fox likes to run the ball, that's going to be impressive. He is still he makes quite a few mistakes in the passing game. I think you can cover that up with a tight end and running back help. And I still think he's young, and he still has growth. Like I said about Fred Miller, grew into what he was, is a very, very solid right tackle, and I can see Bobby Massey doing the same thing.
My take on Kyle Long last year was I think Kyle could be a great tackle. I think Kyle could be a Pro Bowl tackle on either side. But I know that Kyle Long could be a 10-time Pro Bowler, maybe Hall of Famer at guard. Like I feel like I'd seen enough to know that, and I understand the difference between guard and left tackle. When obviously he's moving back to right guard with this move, what do you think about that and what that means for him and his future and how everything kind of went into that from last year?
You know what, a couple things here that I agree. He's a guard. He is an all pro guard. He is he just has so much talent inside. What he did last year was pretty impressive, moving out to right tackle and playing the way he did. But I went, you know, the other free agent we were talking about, Akeem Hicks, I went back and watched him against the Bears in 2014, and it reminded me how good Kyle Long is at guard, because those two guys were battling each other, and Kyle Long is just a good guard, and I think he makes Hronus Grassou better, he'll make Bobby Massey better, and I think that's his natural position, and I'm happy to see him back there. You know, everybody talks about the money that the tackles will make, and well, was it the Raiders just paid? I'm drawing a blank on his name. But
yeah,
you know, guards will
melee.
Be paid. Yeah, yes. If you're good, you're going to get paid, and that's a good start for Kyle Long to use when he is up for free agency. What after next year to possibly get a nice contract? But I think he's an all world guard.
Yeah, he is. You know, Brandon Brooks, for example, got I think $40 million over 5 years at guard, so it's $8 million a year. And the top right tackle is Mitchell Schwartz, and I want to say he only got $6 million a year. And I mean, now left tackle market's a little different, but Kyle was a right tackle, so I think you're right too in the money thing. The guys that Ryan Pace brought back. And I think, obviously, you noticed the special teamers he brought back in Sherrick, McManus, and Jaquizz Rodgers. And then Mitch Unrein, another special teams guy, Mark Mariani, Zach Miller, Tracy Porter. Last year, Pace brought back only Miller and McManus, who stuck to the roster, and Jimmy Clausen. Obviously, this team was better. He had more options. But of those guys that he brought back, you know, what was your analysis of how he handled that?
I think he sees it the same way that Lovey did and Jerry Angelo did, that you have to put a premium on special teams. In my opinion, what you need to do at the wide receiver position, your number five or six guy needs to be a special team stud. Your fifth or sixth linebacker has to be a special team stud. Your fifth safety has to be a special team stud. I think that's where Phil Emery got away a little bit of trying to take the other guys and develop them into safeties, where not into safeties or into their position players, but not worrying about special teams talent. And I think what I see with Ryan Pace is that he's taking that fifth and sixth guy and understanding that they might not be the developmental guy that they could get off the street or, you know, late in the draft, but they need to shore up with some pretty darn good special teams players. And I think that's what he's done.
And the guys here at the podcast know that because of Northwestern, Sherrick Manis is, I mean, he's my guy up there.
No, so. he's great. I love him. I got lucky to play with him. And you need, that's the other thing, is you need one stud out there. You know, we had Tim Shaw before. You named Brendan Iamadejo. Early in my career, we had Frankie Smith. We had Larry Wiggum, who was a Pro Bowler. You have to have kind of that special teams bell cow that gets that room set and gets that tempo set, and Sherrick is one of those guys.
Yeah, when they got into a rhythm at the end of last season, and folks that follow me on Twitter know I get a little nerdy with the special teams during games, Bellamy and McManus, I mean, nobody returned punts against the Bears the second half of last season. I thought those two, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Pat O'Donnell gets some credit too, but those two I thought did a very nice job of that. The Tracy Porter signing I thought made a lot of sense. You need cornerback. They still need another corner, which brings me to when you start looking at the needs that are left on this team, how do you rank them? Where are some of the positions that you think, you know, whether it's the next wave of free agency or probably more importantly, you know, the NFL draft, where do they go next?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that just the other day, and I've got to go cornerback. Tracy Porter bringing him back is huge. But in today's NFL, it's a passing game. You've got to have, you know, you have to have three to four cornerbacks to play to cover all those wide receivers. You know, Bryce Callahan filled in well last year, but I still think you can find somebody with a little more ball-hawking skill set, and I think that's what they need. And I think if I'm drafting, I think I'm going to go with one of those guys. I'm going to get, the best-rated cornerback I can and go with that, because that's where that's the biggest hole for me. And then I got to go tight end. If Martellus Bennett doesn't come back, you've got to find a run blocking tight end, and I think you can do that later in the draft and possibly later in free agency. But that's another hole. If they're going to run the ball the way they want to, you know, having Zach Miller back is great, but he's a great pass catching tight end, and they need somebody to put their hand on the ground.
You know this so well, how the business works, and you've kind of been on the other side, in the media side, watching this, and obviously as a player. So you get the Matt Forte decision, and then whatever they decide to do with Martellus Bennett. But I always have to remind people that whoever they get at running back is going to be a significant drop-off from Matt, and whoever they get at tight end is going to be a significant drop-off from Marty, what those two guys were able to do at their position. Even though you understand what John Fox and Ryan Pace are doing, those positions are kind of intriguing to me now, because running back's I'm a little more comfortable there, but those positions, you have to balance the business and still trying to make your team better. And those two positions right now, you have to argue that they're worse if we're to assume that Bennett's not going to be there.
I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. Jeremy Langford came in last year and did a nice job running the ball. And when Matt Forte out, he knew his blitz protection. When you're running back, you've got to be able to, you know, pick up the blitz. And he knew his blitz protection, but he's still lacking a little bit in the skill set of being able to pick the guys up. So I'm hoping, you know, he can figure that out going into his second year and learning how to pick up the blitzes in the NFL. And that'll be key at that position. And like you said, tight end, you've got to fill that void somehow. But what I've taken from all of this, if Martellus is gone, with Matt Forte being gone, it's that Ryan Pace truly wants to start from ground zero, that he wants to build this, build the build the Bears his own way, kind of strip the old Lovie Smith guys out of there, and let's go and build the John Fox, Ryan Pace era. And I'm okay with that. I have no problem with that. You know, I'm a Lovie Smith supporter and all the ex-guys I played with, but it happens in the NFL. Lovie Smith did it with Jerron guys and Wanstead guys, but it just happens, and sometimes it needs to happen.
Talking here with Patrick Manley on the Chicago Football Podcast, who I am calling the greatest Bears long snapper of all time because it'll make a better title for the podcast. We want to get listeners. And, Pat, on your Twitter profile, I see longsnapper.com. I checked out. You wrote a great thing about what happened at the end of the Vikings playoff game. Is this a website folks should kind of keep an eye out for moving forward?
It is. It should be done Friday, if not Monday. I'm excited. So I put this website together in 1999.
Oh, wow.
A long time ago. And I wanted to – and it was very basic. And it was just – I wanted to put information out there for kids to learn how to long snap, to be able to go somewhere and find out how to long snap. Because I remember being in between the 7th and 8th grade and wanting to learn. My brother and I were having trouble finding information of how to do it. And that's kind of what I wanted to put out there. And finally, now that I have more time being retired, invested more time and money into it, and it should be out later, hopefully Monday or next week. And it'll have two sides to it. One side will be the free side and the basic content that I've had on the site before of how to long snap, how to grip the ball, how to get into a stance, and kind of how to roll your hands out and release the ball. And then I'll have a premium site or advanced site for still haven't figured out what I'm going to charge people for it yet, but I put together a bunch of videos on just the advanced aspects of long snapping. If you truly want to become a good long snapper, I put all this information out there to really help you, and it gives a place for a kid to go and watch videos and email me or text me, and we can chat and try to make you the best long snapper possible. And I wanted to do it for kids to be able to learn how to do it.
That's awesome. And I can call it the best long snapper website, right? Can I do that?
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, right, I'll take that. I'll pump that. I'll pub that.
I'm trying to be hyperbolic here. A couple more minutes here with Pat Manley. I want to talk briefly about your experience in the media. You still are, obviously, and you know, hear you on 670, do the pregame show with Hub and Dan Pompey. When you did the midday show with Matt Spiegel, and I'm not going to get into necessarily how that happened and everything. You've talked about that a lot. But that was such an interesting time for you because you happened to be the co-host of the Midday Show when the Bears had their most up-in-flames season ever. And our previous guest was Jarrett Payton, who was in a similar situation where he was also hosting a show for the first time. He was good friends with some of the Bears players. So I'll ask you the same question. I know you've talked about this, but for our listeners, what was that challenge like for you? Because you couldn't get away with, building up some of these guys who are your friends when the team was playing so poorly. How challenging was that time for you?
It was challenging. And when I took the job, everybody's optimistic. And the year before I played for them and things didn't go well, but I was expecting them to be better. So I was excited to talk about them on the radio. I was excited to see them go to the playoffs. And obviously that didn't happen. It started falling apart very quickly. And I'd been asked that question, how are you going to critique the team? And I said, I'll say exactly what a coach would tell them. They'll know if I'm critiquing a player and he played a bad game, I'll break down whatever he did and give my opinion, but it won't be over the top. It's not going to be judgmental of the person. I'm not going to say the guy's stupid, what an idiotic mistake he made. I'll just say he made this mistake, and I'll explain it as a coach would explain it to the certain player in a position meeting, and that's kind of the way I wanted to go about it. And then things really turned bad, with Mark Trestman and Phil Emery and the team stuff going on in the locker room, and that just made it more difficult. So you kind of have to look in the mirror and say, how am I going to deal with this? And I just said, all I can do is be honest. All I can do is be me. And I tried to do that. Hopefully that came across well on the airwaves. But it was difficult, but, you're getting paid to do a job. I signed up for it, and I had to do it.
Well, I thought you did a great job handling it. And I remember one of your first days as co-host was the Lance Briggs episode, when he didn't, he showed up. He had the barbecue opening. And I can't imagine how hard that must have been with everything going on. And plus, you know, that was maybe one of your first times dealing with score callers and hearing some of these people just the way you do it. So that must have been obviously tough. But with having been on that side and having been in the locker room, I think there's always this media and being an actual player disconnect. Now, I believe, and I'm a little biased, those of us that are on the beat, who are in that locker room every day with you guys, who are at camp, who are at the games, who travel, I like to think that most of us have a pretty good idea of what's going on. Maybe media folks who are writing from away struggle with that a little bit. But what do you think is maybe the biggest disconnect, and not just media, but fans, that maybe people just don't understand about life or what goes into being an NFL player that you see so much in public culture, whether it's Twitter or hearing people call you and talk about on the show, versus what you know it's really like?
It's the work that goes in and the preparation that goes in for the games. That's what I don't think fans understand. The amount of hours, the amount of film study, the body prep. I mean, shoot, having the masseuse having to come to my house on Thursday evenings to help my hip. At the end of my career, my hip was just going. And guy, you know, I needed him to come by to help me be able to get ready for the game. And guys do that all across the league. And it's just the amount of time you put in mentally and physically to get yourself ready. You know, now is a nice time for the guys that are off. But as soon as April comes around, I take that back. They're off, but they're starting to work out on their own, or at least they should be. And it's an 11th month. It's 11 and a half. To me, it's 11 and a half month job where guys are truly invested mentally and physically. And I just don't think people see that. They see the games on Sunday. They hear about practice, but they don't understand the sacrifices that go in physically to be able to play the game and the amount of work that actually goes into the game.
All right, let's finish up here with a couple fun ones. You pride yourself on your mullet and mullets everywhere.
Yep.
What did you think of Brian Urlacher's hair as a hair connoisseur of sorts?
Well, I got lucky to get the soft opening of it, I guess you'd call it. We were for Casey Urlacher, who was running for state senate, and he had a hat on, and I was there with Jerry Azuma, and we were kind of joking. Jerry and I were joking. His hair is a little bit longer that, you know, as you're getting older, you grow your hair out to make yourself look younger. And Brian kind of tilts his hat up, and you can see this patch of hair up there growing. I thought he was just growing out what he still kind of had. Like, he was just hadn't shaved his head in a while. I didn't realize that he was in the middle of a transformation. And I remember waking up, and I think I turned on Twitter to read my news and seeing every tweet about Brian Urlacher's hair. And I was shocked that, you know, that's what I had seen before. I didn't realize it. And then a couple days afterwards, I was at another event for Casey, and Brian was there. And you find yourself talking to his hair. You're not looking at his eyes, you're looking up at his hair. And he's like, "Hey, bud, eyes are down here." I'm like, "I know, it's just unbelievable." And you just, you know, to each his own, he wanted to do it. But what he also said is he always had to shave his head anyway because he had a little bit of hair. And he's like, "If I don't like it, I just have to shave a little more hair every day." So it's, you know, he got paid for it too. So it's, you know, maybe you get bored in retirement. You need a little extra money. I don't think he needs extra money. Maybe he got bored in retirement and just wanted to try it out.
Well, on my drive into our Chicago football studios, I see his billboard in both directions with the hair. So it's a little, certainly a little jarring. But nobody on the team's got better hair than Cutler, right?
No, his hair is amazing, man. That's funny because I used to joke with him all the time. If he had a hat on the sideline, I'm like, "What are you doing? I mean, the TV's gonna, they're not gonna zoom in on you."
Yeah.
And he takes pride in his hair. He likes his hair.
Well, because what's amazing to me is he can finish a game, take the helmet off, or come out to us after practice, and it looks majestic. I don't know how he does it.
He trains it at home. I think he sits in meetings or sits at home, and he just runs his hands through his hair so it goes that certain way. And once he takes the helmet off, it just pops right up to that. Whatever he does, I don't know what he does with it. Yeah, but he does. He's majestic hair. I like the way you put it.
All right, Pat, I'm going to – this is my podcast, so I get to end it with my own personal story of when I first met you.
Yep.
This was – I was a fifth-grade student at Sherwood School in Highland Park, and Patrick's wife was one of our – I don't know if she was a substitute teacher at the time, because she was there pretty much every day. I mean, she's essentially like the third teacher.
Yeah, she was teaching third grade. She was splitting with I'm drawing a blank of her name, but they split the class because the other lady was pregnant. So she taught like Monday through Wednesday afternoon. The other lady taught from Wednesday afternoon through Friday.
So this would have been 1999. So you just finished your rookie year, and you came to talk to our class. And I still remember this so clearly, and I told you this story. So this is more for our listeners, my producers, who are very intrigued. I had nothing for you to sign. And one of the questions somebody had asked you, what was your favorite sport besides football? And you, the way I remember it, you said basketball. So I went in my desk and I had a like a Koosh DePaul basketball, and I asked you to sign it, and all the guys made fun of me that I had this Bears player sign this basketball for me, but I still remembered the story. I embarrassed you a little bit because I told you about it in the locker room next to like the youngest guys on the team.
Yes.
And look, you're not that old. I just happened to be kind of young at the time, which was funny too, because my teacher that year was Mr. Brooks, a diehard Packers fan, by the way, and he was like 24 when he was teaching me. So you guys were like the same age anyways. But that still to this day, of course, resonates of the first time that I got to meet the greatest Bears long snapper of all time, Pat Manley.
Yeah, that was funny because it was John Bostic to my right and Jordan Mills to my left, and I think one was 21 and one was 22, and they heard that story and looked at you and looked at me and like, you are old, man.
And what's great, too, is, Pat, I actually asked a few of my friends from the Sherwood days what they remembered about it, and my friend Anna told me whatever you signed for her, I think it was just a piece of paper, she actually gave it to her dad as a Father's Day gift. So rookie long snapper Pat Manley was a part of a Father's Day gift. My parents actually remembered you dealt blackjack at one of the school events. At least they claim that.
I did.
So, I mean, you were a celebrity at Sherwood School in Highland Park. Now, granted, your wife was a fantastic teacher, so I don't want to take anything away from her, of course. But we were in awe. I asked another friend. I asked my friend Marina, who was my neighbor. I said, do you remember when Pat Manley came? And she goes, oh, my God, that was like the coolest day ever. I said, what do you remember about it? She goes, oh, absolutely nothing. But I just remember it being one of the coolest days ever. So I thought you'd appreciate knowing how much, you know, that memory has lasted with a lot of people that went to school there.
That's funny. I didn't realize it, they would remember that. And by the way, Carl Berg told me to tell you to say hello.
So Carl Berg was the other fifth grade teacher. I say hello. I did get a Twitter follow from him before the podcast, so that's probably it. I would tell Mr. Brooks to follow me too, but he doesn't know how to work technology, which is ironic because these were our two fifth grade teachers, and one was 24, and Mr. Berg was not 24 at the time, much older. But yet Mr. Berg follows me on Twitter, and I'm going to show my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Brooks, this podcast, and he'll have no idea how to play it. But I wanted to reminisce with you, get a little nostalgic on how much we were in awe of the Bears rookie long snapper in 1999.
That's crazy. That's a good story, man.
Yeah. All right. That is Pat Manley, Bears long snapper. Go check out longsnapper.com and make sure you're following him on Twitter at Patrick Manley. Has great Bears insights, great mullet insights. If Duke football's playing well, he's got that too. You can hear him on The Score sometimes. Pat, this was a lot of fun. Really appreciate you joining the program.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It was great chatting with you.
All righty. So, Pat Manley, that was a blast. That was fun for me. I don't think I told you guys, my producers here, John Sally, Jason Frummer, that I was going to about that connection I had with Pat. But it took me a little while to bring up the story to him. And he still talks to my fifth grade teachers. Which is pretty cool.
So I've got three notes from this podcast here.
All right, three notes from John Sally.
This is an awesome interview with Patrick. Thank you very much to Patrick for coming on. Do you still have the Koosh basketball?
I don't think so, which is weird because I have so much stuff. It's like kind of, I'm do I have the basketball? I have so much random stuff and a lot of DePaul stuff laying around because my mom works there. I kind of want to look for it because it'd be fun now to find it, take a picture and send it to Pat. But it was crazy to me. Like we were such in awe. You could have told me he was a long snapper, which he was. And it was the coolest thing ever that our teacher's husband was Pat Manley. Now looking back, the dude was 22 years old. And as I said, my teacher was 24, so it wasn't like that big of a deal, but it's crazy to think back on like how much that mattered to us then. All right, what are number two and number three on your list?
All right, number two, we got to hear from Warren Sapp now, right?
Oh my God! Well, I know I have our podcast dream guest list, and
I might have to add him to the list.
I can literally just say, Warren Sapp, tell me about the time you hocked a loogie on Pat Manley. He tells a story. Warren Sapp, Hall of Famer, thanks for joining the program.
That's the whole podcast.
And just
right
call
there.
It a show. Yeah.
And number three, did we just step on Hairlow's territory with our 5 minutes on?
So it's funny you mention Hairlow Chicago because they've had a couple guests on their program, which is a good podcast. You should go follow Hairlow Chicago.
After you listen to our podcast, after you listen to ours, theirs.
They've had a couple of guests that are going to be future guests on our show. Uh-oh. So, and then maybe
Has the gauntlet been thrown?
We could maybe have a cross. We could do like a real world road rules
challenge type of deal. Yeah.
with Harlow Chicago. But, you know, look, we're going to. I didn't want to go in depth with Patrick about the Cutler stuff like we did with Jay or Peyton last week because Pat's talked about Cutler a lot. Everyone should know what he thinks about Jay. But we had to talk about the hair. And I think Pat gives a fun insight because, you know, he's got the mullet. I mean, mullet versus Cutler's hair. Zach Miller, by the way, who Jarrett told us had the best hair on the team. Kyle Long confirmed that on Twitter this week when Zach Miller was re-signed. That was two things, John. Did you have a third, or was that your third thing? No, that was your third thing, because he has the basketball-worn set. So, great stuff with Pat Manley. And the other thing, too, and we're going to bring out a lot of folks that are in media, and I was always fascinated by how he handled being in the media during the Titanic season. And he's got to sit there and criticize the guys he's been friends with, guys he's played with, coaches he played for. You know, he didn't play for Trestman. He only played for Trestman for 1 year, but he still respected Mark Trestman. So that had to be a tough thing to do. But as I said, I always listen to the show. I thought he did a really good job of it. It gives good insight. And you could listen to him on the pregame show, The Hub. John, did you ever – he and Hub had a little good back and forth during that season when he was hosting the show. He did not agree with the column Hub wrote. And it was really good radio, actually, and both of them – know each other well, they respect each other well, but part of it, I think, was what Pat told me about my question about the disconnect and how much work these guys actually do put in. I think sometimes we forget that.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point by Patrick, and you're right, it was really excellent radio, and I think part of the transition for Patrick from player to media, and I think that's certainly a part of it.
I am kind of bummed that he wouldn't let me call him the greatest long snapper of all time.
He wouldn't let you. That doesn't mean you can't.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We'll throw that in the description, of course.
Should that be in the headline?
Yeah, Pat Manley. And also just good football stuff from Pat, who, you know, watches this team, follows this team, and gave good insight into what's going on. So that'll do it for this episode of Chicago Football Podcast. It was fun. We got into the free agency signings. We'll do a little bit more on that next week. Eventually, we're going to start getting to some draft talk and getting ready for the NFL draft April 28th to 30th. Hope our executive producer, Dan Mott, is feeling better. I'm sure he's listening. Jason Frommer, thanks for stepping in, filling in. Of course, John Sally taking the reins of the program one day after election night, which kept John and everyone else here at the Northwest Herald at the office way too long. So thank you to them. Big thank you, of course, to Patrick Manley, the greatest long snapper in the history of the NFL, in my humble opinion, and who signed a basketball for me when I was in fifth grade, for coming on. Be sure to check out ChicagoFootball.com for all the latest Bears news, and ProFootballWeekly.com, and check out the PFW podcast the guys are doing. I'm Kevin Fishbane. Great show. We'll talk to you guys next week.